Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and thank you for joining us for DW's Africa Link program. I am Jane Ayeke-Kumet.
And I'm Stella Oneko, bringing you the social media news and comments on African stories.
Let's start with our main stories of the day. Participants at the climate change conference in Marrakech await US position after Trump's victory.
There are people who actually fear that the US will withdraw from this whole climate negotiations altogether.
It's a Black Monday in Sierra Leone as people protest government's austerity measures.
We decided today to call Monday Black Monday because we all know there's been a hike in fuel price by the government of Sierra Leone by 62%.
And we'll be taking a look at how the term Black Monday is being used otherwise.
But before that, let's hear what's happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. German Chancellor Angela Merkel's CDU party has endorsed Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier as candidate for the German presidency, paving the way for Steinmeier to replace current president Joachim Gauck in February. The decision was made following talks with ruling coalition members on Monday. We go to DW's Daniel Peltz in Berlin for more.
The decision to nominate Frank-Walter Steinmeier as Germany's next federal president came after weeks of behind-the-scenes negotiations between Germany's two major political parties, the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats. German Chancellor Angela Merkel hailed Steinmeier as an excellent candidate. He's one of Germany's most popular politicians and enjoys respect across the political divide for his sober, matter-of-fact approach to political issues. Both parties needed a joint candidate because neither has the necessary number of seats in the Federal Assembly, the body that elects Germany's presidents. The post of federal president is largely a ceremonial one.
U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has named Republican National Committee Chairman Rance Priebus as his White House chief of staff. Priebus is expected to work with Republicans on top priorities of the Trump administration, such as the controversial building of a wall along the U.S.-Mexican border and kicking out millions of illegal immigrants. Trump spoke to U.S. media late on Sunday.
We are going to get the people that are criminal and have criminal records, gang members, drug dealers. We have a lot of these people, probably 2 million, it could even be 3 million. We're getting them out of our country or we're going to incarcerate. But we're getting them out of our country. They're here illegally. We want to secure our border.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. New Zealand Prime Minister John Key told reporters on Monday that Sunday's deadly 7.8 magnitude earthquake could result in at least 1 billion euros in damages. He added it could take days to assess the significant damages that have crippled infrastructure and killed at least two people. Guinea-Bissau's President José Mário Vaz has said he would dissolve the government, helping to end a political deadlock that has gripped the West African country since last year. Vaz said he would name a new prime minister to form an exclusive government without delay. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, Prime Minister Augustin Matata Ponyo has resigned. His resignation, brokered with opposition members, paves the way for President Joseph Kabila to extend his power until after his second term. Kabila has been in office since 2001. Kabila was due to step down in December, but alleged delays in voter registration have postponed this month's election until April 2018. Ponyo would be replaced by an opposition member. And finally, in sports, Germany's national football team and head coach Joachim Löw have met with Pope Francis at the Vatican in Rome. Germany wraps up their 2016 schedule with a friendly match against old rivals Italy in Milan on Tuesday. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Civil society groups in Sierra Leone declare Black Monday to protest austerity measures, including recent goods and services tax on gas. Today, people across Sierra Leone went to work or conducted their daily business dressed in black. This was a passive protest against the government's move. The government introduced measures after the outbreak of Ebola and fall of iron ore prices, which is the country's major income earner. Mutala Kamara reports.
Heavily armed anti-riot police officers patrol the streets of the capital, Freetown, in armored personnel carriers to disperse potential riots. But the capital was quiet, with individuals going about their normal businesses, dressed in black to protest the government austerity measures. The police had issued warning that an attempt by members of the public to demonstrate without a police clearance will be met with the full force. The main group leading the protest action is the Renaissance Movement. Chairman of the movement, Barrister Emmanuel Safa Abdullahi, explained how they arrived at the Black Monday decision.
There's no denying the fact that this country has been plagued by corruption over the years, and as a result of this, we have clearly decided that it's time to stand up as young people. We decided today to call the Black Monday because we all know there's been a hike in fuel price by the government of Sierra Leone by 62%. And the excuse is that the hike is because of the pressure from the IMF and they're reducing subsidies. But technically, when you look at the subsidies which government is talking about, it's basically less than 5%. And so we don't see the justification for raising the price by 62%.
Victor J. Camara is a lecturer at Fobe College and an expert on the economy. He told me what went wrong.
The subsidy was meant to cushion the hardship of Sierra Leoneans. But up to the time when government had discovered the collapse of the economy, they decided to remove it so that they will raise more revenue in anticipation of, you know, carrying out the operations or the effective machinery of the government. But that also had a far-reaching effect on the citizens of Sierra Leone.
Camara said mismanagement of funds and misplaced priorities of the government led to where Sierra Leone is today. He suggested on how Sierra Leone needs to address the issue.
Now, the short-term solution is for the government to borrow money in order to cushion the deficit. It is uneconomical and counterproductive if the government will have to be imposing taxes on people to raise more revenue, as it will create more hardship on the lives of the people. I think that is the immediate solution. The government should secure immediate loans, either from international organizations or from neighboring countries.
While there was no sign of active protest around the country, the popularity of the government of Ernest Bai Koroma seemed to be waning as a result of its austerity measure.
Mutala Kamara in Freetown.
Now, I wanted to find out what kind of things people were saying about Black Monday on social media, and it's actually interesting to see that the hashtag Black Monday is not trending in Sierra Leone, as could be expected from the report we just heard, but it's been quite popular in Poland and in Burundi. So, for example, in Poland, it's been used to protest against an abortion ban in October this year. And in Burundi, people were using it to remember what they call victims of the third mandate of President Pierre Nkurunziza.
And if you look at the history of Black Monday, it's been used several times. One very prominent Black Monday happened in 1987 when stock markets around the world crashed.
And that's where I guess Sierra Leoneans are taking their lead from.
Sure. It's exactly 1 week since climate change conference kicked off in the Moroccan town of Marrakesh. Today, the journal Earth System Science Data published a report indicating that global carbon emissions have remained steady for the past 3 years. DW's Florin Nersch is in Marrakesh and has been telling me what has so far been reached.
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that even though this whole COP has been going on for 1 week, the so-called high-level segment of this COP, so all the ministers, sometimes even the heads of state, they're only due to arrive tomorrow. They will be greeted by the King of Morocco. So the political talks will only kick off tomorrow.
During his campaign, the U.S. President-elect Trump certainly claimed that he did not believe in climate change and he promised to revive coal production. Now, considering that the U.S. is the second leading producer of carbon emissions after China, has there been any debate on how to engage with Mr. Trump?
Well, that's a $100 million question, basically. And we're very curious to find out what one of the leading delegates from the U.S. is about to say, Jonathan Pershing. He will hold a press conference in about half an hour. And I'm sure that he will underline or talk about how the U.S. will actually position themselves and on the way forward. Now, there are different concerns. There are people who actually fear that the U.S. will withdraw from this whole climate negotiations altogether, that there might even leave the UNFCCC, so the Convention on Climate Change, that they could actually do within 1 year. It's not that easy to withdraw from the Paris Agreement. They would need 4 years for that. So nobody really knows what the U.S. is going to do. And there's also fear that if the U.S. actually retreats from this whole climate negotiations, that they will set a bad example. And other countries, for example, Saudi Arabia, will say, well, if the U.S. are not part of this anymore, why should we? Interestingly enough, the Chinese have positioned themselves quite strongly now, and they say, we still value the Paris Agreement, we still want to fight climate change, and even if the US will retreat from that, so be it, but we're still on board.
Let's move from the American continent and go to Africa. Now, Africans feel the most pinch of the climate change, despite its contribution being the lowest. Now, what has been Africa's position so far?
Well, for Africa, the biggest topic is always climate finance. They say we're the weakest link in this whole debate. We're the ones that are suffering the most from the impacts of climate change. And it's not that much about mitigation for them. It's about adaptation. And they just want to get money from the industrialized countries to actually adapt in their respective countries to the consequences that climate change already has in their countries. So they're holding the industrialized nations responsible. And this morning from the German delegation, we heard that tomorrow, on Tuesday, there should be some new money sort of made available to the African continent. We don't know exactly how much it will be.
I was speaking to DW's Florian Noche, who is in Marrakesh. Now, Save the Children has warned that in northeastern Nigeria, some 200 children could die from hunger every day if there is no immediate intervention. In its report, Save the Children reveals that up to half of all under fives in some areas are suffering from acute malnutrition. Due to Boko Haram operations in the region, many families are restricted to internally displaced people's camps with minimal living conditions. Maltarova Kalman reports.
The charity monitored children under the age of five for several months and found that almost half of them were acutely malnourished. In remote areas, this figure could be even higher. Often the children also suffered from life-threatening illnesses like pneumonia, malaria or diarrhea. Islamist terrorist group Boko Haram's insurgency triggered a humanitarian crisis that the UN called the worst on the African continent. Figures from the World Health Organization show that more than 2 million people have fled their homes, while 7 million need humanitarian help. The international community pledged $500 million in aid funds, but much of the money has not been delivered. Save the Children's Nigeria director Ben Foote warned that double the amount was needed next year to bring the situation under control.
Maltarova Kalman compiled that report. Still to come, Ugandan drivers use mobile app to dodge the police while Nigeria grapples with diabetes patients. But first, some social media.
Exactly. Now, we've gotten some answers from stories on from the stories we've been covering last week. And we got some answers on DW Africa on Facebook. One story was, for example, on how Germany would like to launch a Marshall-type financial program for African countries. And Germany's development minister, Gerd Müller, said, and I quote, "It's not about us going to Africa with our plans and our finances and saying how it's got to be done." So we got a couple of responses to this. And for example, Nzena Ozo Chukwokiebiama, it's a very difficult name there, said that the African map must be redrawn if any developmental program will succeed.
And on a similar issue, we also had a story from Northern Ghana and how little has changed despite the existence of so many NGOs in the region.
Yes, exactly. That report came from Tamale, and we had two comments. One person said, "I'm sorry to hear that." And Isaac Ehosa Godwin said, "I still say sorry for those looking up to development assistance or help because they only care for themselves and their families."
You're listening to Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And me, Salah Oneko.
In Uganda, the police are having a hard time arresting drunken drivers.
When you get involved in these technological inventions with intentions of committing crimes, you risk being arrested.
And we'll be looking at how Kenyans and South Africans are discussing land issues.
And DW's Chuck Pelman will be, and DW's Chuck Penfold will be joining us to talk some sport later in the show. But first, in Uganda, traffic accidents are a major cause of death. The Ugandan police says more than 300 lives were lost in road accidents since the beginning of this year. Oftentimes, this results from inexperienced drivers, cars in dangerous mechanical conditions, and drunk drivers. This forced the authorities to intensify operations, more especially at night, to arrest drivers suspected of drink driving. But as Alex Kitter reports from Kampala, an IT guru has developed a smartphone application to help drivers avoid police checkpoints.
Blow continuous. You have you not. Blow. Don't disturb me.
The police officers here are arguing with a driver and asking him to blow into the breathalyzer machine to determine whether he was in a good condition to drive. These operations are commonly known as kawunyemu in Uganda. Kawunyemu means smell it. Before police officers acquired the breathalyzers, they would smell the drivers to detect alcohol. Now, one computer technologies geek thinks he can help out drunk drivers to beat the police checkpoints. He has developed a smartphone app called Kawunyemu that drivers use to warn their fellows where the checkpoints are. The developer of the app, who refused to be interviewed face-to-face or reveal his name, says his invention has been welcomed by many people and are using it.
There was a need for this app. Actually, it happened after my good friends, six of them, were arrested in the same vehicle. They were all drunk. When we sat down, we said, what can we do? How can we really avoid this kind of thing from happening? While people may think it's a bad thing and so forth, but also if you look at the way the police operate sometimes, you just have no option but to do what you can. So we decided to come up with this app.
The Uganda police has been listed among the most corrupt public institutions in the country. The Kawunyemu app developer adds that drivers should be responsible for the sake of their lives.
Well, at the end of the day, it's the responsibility of somebody not to drink and drive. But I hope really people who are drunk should watch the speed at which they drive, and they should try to get somebody else who can drive them to where they are going.
The police is looking for him to first of all pull down the app before he faces cybercrime-related charges. According to the police spokesperson for Kampala, Emiliano Kaima, police has been monitoring users of the app and could be closing in on the developer.
The operation is intended to save your life. In simple terms, we are saying, it's okay for you to drink, but don't drive while drunk. When you get involved in these technological inventions with intentions of committing crimes, you risk being arrested because we have monitoring units of what you are doing.
The police have launched a campaign specifically to discourage people from downloading the app, but also reduce cases of drink driving. We spoke to a few drivers to tell us whether they would use the app to avoid police.
The idea of having roadblocks to have people who are driving under the influence is good. The intention is good. However, it has been abused, it has been misused, because instead, police is there to collect money. Because after collecting the money, the same person will drive away his car. So if this application is there to help me know where they have put the roadblock, I would use it.
It's bad in the sense that you're not fighting crime. It gives a lot of gap and loopholes.
According to the Global Status on Alcohol and Health Report of 2014, Uganda is the biggest consumer of alcohol in East Africa.
Alex Gita in Kampala. Now, on Health Check, today is World Diabetes Day. This year's theme is Eyes on Diabetes. Activities to mark the day aim to promote early diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. According to the International Diabetes Federation, 415 million adults were suffering with the disease in 2015. The number is expected to increase to around 642 million by 2040. Now, Africa's largest nation, Nigeria, has the highest number of people suffering from the disease. Sam Olukoya in Lagos has been finding out why many Nigerians suffer from diabetes and what it means to live with the condition in Nigeria.
A busy hospital in Lagos, Nigerian hospitals are contending with increasing cases of diabetes. 45-year-old Moses Abu, a private security guard, has the condition. He says diabetes has changed his life for the worse.
I cannot have enough savings to plan for the future of my family. So what will I do? All my salary goes to food and buying drugs. The cost of drugs has gone high now. If I don't take the drugs for 2 weeks, you will not recognize me again. I will look like someone who is approaching 60 to 70 years. We are just managing to pay school fees and house rent.
We are managing what to eat, what to pay the school fees, how to pay house rent.
About 5 million Nigerians have diabetes. Like Abu, many of them are poor people whose income is hardly sufficient to meet the expenses needed to manage the disease. Dr. Adedoyin Oguyemi, a public health physician, says changing lifestyles, especially with the food Nigerians eat, is among the key factors responsible for the high rate of diabetes in Nigeria.
Yes, so I just mentioned the fact that we are trying to westernize. So, ordinarily, when they talk about diet, we'd probably cook from scratch. But we'll find out that most of the kinds of food, because of the fast life we're living, are fast foods and things that are very high in sugar, refined sugar. So rather than taking the fruits, the vegetables, the fiber, we are going for refined sugars and we're going for fast foods and things that become sugar very quickly in the body. And all these things can begin to make people more predisposed to now than before to diabetes.
One does not need to go too far to see how much Nigerians love eating and taking sweet things.
Popcorn. Buy your popcorn. Hot one is here. Fresh one.
At a busy Lagos roadside, a man makes and sells popcorn. One thing that becomes noticeable easily is the quantity of sugar he puts in the popcorn. People queue up to buy the popcorn. The popcorn seller says it's difficult for his customers to resist hot popcorn steaming with sugar. But why do Nigerians love sweet things in spite of the health hazard? Mayowa Adebola explains.
I just like things, sweet things generally, from sweet soda to chocolate, sweets, cookies. And that's the reason I don't take alcohol, because most beer ain't sweet. I only take Irish cream because it's sweet and it tastes great. I find it difficult to consume things that ain't sweet. My body system doesn't accept it.
The changing lifestyles, which has made Nigerians vulnerable to health problems like diabetes, is potentially dangerous for a country where the hospitals are poorly equipped to take care of major health problems.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos. Now let's catch up with some sports news. And joining me to talk about that is DW's sports editor, Chuck Penfold. Chuck, let's talk about the German national team. Now, the team will face off Italy tomorrow in a friendly match. They're already in Rome, where they also met the Pope. What's your take on that?
Yeah, they didn't just happen to meet the Pope. I mean, not many people do get a private audience with the Pope, but they got to see him this morning in the Vatican. They had the private audience with him and spent almost an hour with him. Kind words were said from both sides. Of course, Pope Francis is very much a football fan, and all of the players and the coach that we've heard from so far were all very impressed by the Pope. And Serge Gnabry said it was very impressive. Joachim Löw said he touched every one of them. So nice meeting for them this morning.
There is no doubt that Joachim Löw's boys have had some great success. In the World Cup qualifier, Germany trusts San Marino 8-0. Was this a surprise, or did it come as a surprise?
Well, maybe we should go back just quickly to Friday when they beat San Marino 8-0, because there were a couple of partly African players that took part for the first time for Germany. One was Serge Gnabry, who scored a hat-trick in that 8-goal victory. That's the first time a debutant for Germany has scored a hat-trick since 1976. The other partly African player, Benjamin Henrichs, also started that game and played the full 90 minutes, so great starts for both of those. In terms of Italy tomorrow, that's a friendly match, but it's an interesting match because they're sort of the old enemy for Germany. Germany for years at tournaments has had a really tough time with Italy. Their overall record, 9 wins, 10 draws, and 15 defeats. Although this year, Germany has had the upper hand. They won a friendly back in March in Munich, 4-1, and they in the quarterfinals, they beat, after the Euro, they beat Italy 6-5 on penalties. So, but there's always a lot of prestige on the line, even though it's just a friendly.
Mm-hmm. So even if it's just a friendly, what can we expect?
We can expect a tough match. Germany they're trying to do more for the attack. That's part of the reason they brought up Gnabry, and that's part of the reason they've got Miroslav Klose as their new striking coach, because they've had trouble scoring goals. With Italy, you can expect a very skilled team and a very tough team, very well-organized team defensively. So it could be tricky for Germany to score goals, but should be a good one.
Let's leave it at that and go back a little bit to the Bundesliga. Now, news coming from Borussia Dortmund is that the 9-team Olympic sprint champion Usain Bolt will be training with the team. What is your take on that one? Does it come as a surprise?
Well, we don't know if he will. It looks like he will. Basically, his corporate partner, corporate sponsor, Puma, is also involved with Dortmund. So it's come through that connection there. Basically, Dortmund has confirmed that at some point he will train with the team, but we don't know when. Usain Bolt has in the past talked about wanting to be a pro footballer, but I would say it's a little bit early to be speculating on a second career after sprinting.
What could Dortmund be driving at by having Bolt on the board?
Oh, I think it's just a bit of fun, really. I mean, it's probably, in terms of their brand, it's probably a bit of extra publicity, but they don't really need that. I think this has really just come through a contact between them and through them and Puma. And, of course, the publicity is nice, but they've got a big game coming up on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They're playing Bayern on Saturday. That's what everybody in Dortmund, I think, will really be focused on. Sure. Because that's usually the biggest game of either the Hinrunde or the Rückrunde,
exactly.
either half of the season. And they call it the Classico here, or the Klassiker, mm-hmm. here in Germany. So that's a big game coming up that everybody's looking forward to on the weekend.
DW Sports editor Chalk Penfold.
And on social media, we're now going to take a look at land ownership. Land ownership, land rights, and land grabbing are huge topics throughout the African continent, of course. And today, this topic has been one of the major topics discussed in both South Africa and Kenya.
Yes, you're right, Sela. And in South Africa, Julius Malema stood before a court in Bloemfontein. Malema is the very controversial and spoken leader of the EFF party. That's the Economic Freedom Fighters Party.
Exactly. And Malema was in court today for a statement he made in 2014, where he called on party members to seize land owned by white people. And now he said similar things again today, and his name was once again all over Twitter, and people were tweeting, hands off CIC, so those were his supporters, and CIC is referring to Malema, who is the commander-in-chief for the EFF party. And there were lots of pictures and videos going around from the EFF itself, which show him and his supporters singing and dancing and all of it.
Singing and dancing sounds an interesting bit of it. So it seems like Malema supporters and the EFF itself was making quite a lot of noise about this.
Yes, they were. But there were also a few critical people, for example, Simon Masilo, who wrote, "Dear Malema, the problem is not white people. The problem is government. Do not divide us, please." And a prominent South African lawyer, Christina Kunter, tweeted, "I understand why some people love Malema so much right now. He exclusively focused on bringing down the ANC for them."
Interesting. But you also say that people were discussing land issues in Kenya.
Yes, exactly. Apparently, Uhuru Kenyatta's administration had decided to explain what they're doing on certain issues to the Kenyan public. And one of these issues is land. And they wanted... they said that they wanted to highlight unequal land ownership in Kenya. And There were some people very critical about this. They were saying that the government is actually part of the problem. And one person tweeted, Felix Kiptum tweeted, that the policy framework is weak when public institutions have conflict amongst themselves over land. And I think that brings us to an end of Africa Link today. And for more discussions, follow us on our Facebook page, GW Africa. I'm Stella Oneko.
And I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet in Bonn, Germany.